This is the son of PCJ. On shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is Media Network Plus.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Paulette McQuarrie. Coming up in this special edition of Media Network Plus, we head to Washington, D.C. to visit a station that was set up specifically to reach people who live under oppressive regimes, Radio Free Asia. Media Network Plus, unmasking the truth and not staying anonymous. Radio Free Asia signed on in 1996. The station was built from the 1989 pro-democracy crackdown in Tiananmen Square. At the same time, Radio Free Asia, or RFA, is used to reach people in other oppressive regimes. RFA broadcasts in Mandarin, Tibetan, Burmese, Vietnamese, Korean, Laotian, Khmer, Cantonese, and Uyghur. The largest of the language sections are Mandarin and Tibetan, with a combined 22 hours a day. Radio Free Asia works with a network of people who call in with story leads from within the countries they target. These stories and leads are checked and double-checked by their staff in Washington before they go to air. Throughout its history, RFA has had some high-profile listeners, including Burma's democracy leader Aung San Suu Kyi, who was a regular listener while she was under house arrest, the Tibetan spiritual leader, the Dalai Lama. Sources to this program have said that the Chinese artist Ai Weiwei is also a listener.
This is Radio Free Asia. The following program is in Uyghur.
Erkin Asiya Radyosu. Hazır, Amazon'un paytaxtı Washington'dan Erkin Asiya Radyosu'nun Uyghurca yayınını başlayınız.
During the Cold War, along with the Voice of America, Radio Liberty provided its audience behind the Iron Curtain with news and information that was censored. It was not until the collapse of the Soviet Union and other communist regimes that stations like Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty really knew the size of its audience. In 1989, as Eastern Europe started to move towards democracy, the Far East was a different story. Oppressive governments in Vietnam, Burma, Cambodia, North Korea, and China continued to oppress their populations. But on June 4th, 1989, the world started paying closer attention to this part of the world, in particular China. June 4th, 1989 is a date people will remember as the day the communist authorities in China crushed the pro-democracy student movement. At the time, there were many foreign journalists in Beijing to cover the visit to China by Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev, but his visit was overshadowed. In May 1989, media restrictions in Beijing were lifted because of the visit, but then a few weeks later were tightened from what they had been. Just before they were tightened, even China's external service, Radio Beijing, reported on the tanks that entered Tiananmen Square.
This is Radio Beijing. Please remember June the 3rd, 1989. The most tragic event happened in the Chinese capital, Beijing. Thousands of people, most of them innocent civilians, were killed by fully armed soldiers when they forced their way into the city. Among the killed are our colleagues at Radio Beijing. The soldiers were riding on armored vehicles and used machine guns against thousands of local residents and students who tried to block their way. When the army convoys made a breakthrough, soldiers continued to spray their bullets indiscriminately at crowds in the street. By
witnesses say some armored vehicles even crushed foot soldiers who hesitated in front of the resisting civilians. Radio Beijing English Department deeply mourns those stuck in a tragic incident and appeals to all its listeners to join our protest for the gross violation of human rights and the most barbarous suppression of the people. Because of the abnormal situation here in Beijing, there is no other news we could bring you. We sincerely ask for your understanding and thank you for joining us at this most tragic moment.
It was at this time that a service to Asia came into being. Then a few years later, on March 12, 1996, Radio Free Asia was born. Radio Free Asia's mission is to broadcast news and information to listeners in Asia who are otherwise denied access to full and free information, and to provide a forum for the variety of opinions and voices from within Asia. Andrew Janicek, Director of Program and Operations Support, explains how it was born.
Radio Free Europe, Voice of America, have been around for decades. Radio Free Asia has been around only since 1996. And what we tell people when they come to visit Radio Free Asia is we came about basically because of Tiananmen Square. In 1989, people that were living in China's own capital didn't even know what was going on down the street from them. In the United States, people like Congress were saying, we need to do something like a Radio Free Europe to help the people of China find out what's going on inside their own borders. Legislation came up in 1994 and was approved for the creation of Radio Free Asia. And in September 1996, we went on with our first broadcast. And we've been doing it for over 15 years now.
I find it kind of extraordinary because in the 1970s, 1980s, China, for example, Vietnam, North Korea was under communism like the Soviet Union. Was that because U.S. foreign policy was different at the time that it is now, so there was less focus on the area, or was because the VOA was mainly covering it?
VOA has its own mission to broadcast to all of the world, really, and I think to promote the United States culture and our way of life. Our job at Radio Free Asia is different, and I think things are constantly changing. You know, everything from detente and when Nixon went into China, things have been changing since then, to the point that now China is favored nation status with the United States. But that doesn't mean that everybody has free access to news and information. So in the 90s, again, early 90s particularly, that was when the gears were working in the United States, at least, to put together Radio Free Asia. Again, based upon what we saw on TV coming out of China during the Tiananmen Square uprising, it was a shock to not just people in the United States, but people of the world to think, oh my gosh, this is going on someplace in the world. What can we do to help them? Radio Free Asia's job is really more focused than probably any of the major broadcasters you could think of as a surrogate station. You know, we're there to provide a news and information for the people inside the country's borders. So, again, VOA being much broader in their scope met a need and meets a need, but Radio Free Asia has been established and is put in place to meet another more specific need within those countries. So the fact that they censor their media or control their media more is something that we in the United States don't really have to face. So in order to supplement and, if nothing else, support the listeners in the country, Radio Free Asia is there to give them news of what's going on in and around them.
The day after the station went on the air, China's government mouthpiece, China Daily, ran an editorial with less than flattering words, as Jennifer Zhou, the deputy director of programming, explains.
Well, actually, the day after Radio Free Asia went on the air, China Daily ran an editorial that pretty much said Radio Free Asia shut up. But in the 15 years that we have been on the air, the Chinese government has never been able to cite one specific example saying that Radio Free Asia got it wrong. They don't like what we say on the air because I know this sounds so... We report the truth, and they don't like what we are saying on the air, but they have not been able to pinpoint one report saying you got this fact wrong, you got that fact wrong. We go by the two source rule. We verify every lead we get. A lot of the self-immolation stories that we were able to break, our listeners called us up and tipped us off, and then we were able to confirm the leads independently with other sources inside China. We have a extensive network of contacts inside China, which is one of the reasons why we have been able to break one story after another, not just the Tibetan stories, the Mandarin stories. In 2005, in December, I don't know if you remember the little Tiananmen incident in Guangdong, Radio Free Asia's Mandarin service broke that story because our reporter had been talking to local villagers months ahead of time when we knew that they were angry about the construction of this power plant. And so when armed police moved in the evening of December the 5th in 2005, the villagers called our reporter on her cell phone and said that they're using real bullets on us. This is one reason we have extensive networks of people across all geographic regions inside China. Our listeners also, it's a gold mine of news tips. But we always go by the two-source rule. Sometimes we verify with multiple sources, not just two sources.
Now, when you have sources like that that are in China, in the back of your mind, you must be thinking sometime, I hope we're not putting any of these people in danger, because China does have a very vast security network. They're very good at observing people and watching people, even though, okay, they're not using a real name on the air, they can monitor a cell phone conversation, they can monitor an email. How and what do you do so this does not happen, so their safety and their family's safety is assured?
We distort their voices. A lot of times we post, if we are airing somebody with an exclusive lead, we would distort their voices and we would use a pseudonym, and we would tell our listeners this is a pseudonym and the voice has been distorted. We do our best to protect our sources, it's really sad that we have not always been successful. In, I think, 1997 or 1998, a labor leader in Hunan province, Zhang Shanguang, he was interviewed by one of our reporters, and we interviewed him about an NGO he was trying to form, how to fight for workers' rights and peasants' rights. During the interview, he said, by the way, as I speak, there are hundreds of peasants protesting downtown at this location, and you should report it. And so when we aired the interview, we did not report the part where he said there are these hundreds of people protesting, because we were not able to confirm it. We did not report it. But when he was arrested by Chinese police, eventually he was put on trial. In the official indictment, one of the charges against him was that he divulged information to Radio Free Asia about a labor unrest. How did they get that? They were monitoring his phone line. He got 10 years. When I got word that he had been sentenced to 10 years and that Radio Free Asia was mentioned in indictment, it was just before Christmas, and it was the saddest Christmas of my life. But we do try to protect people's identity. But then when you're dealing with a huge state police, it's very hard.
Radio Free Asia uses various platforms to distribute its programs: shortwave, internet, and satellite. One of the challenges for any international broadcaster is to know how many people are listening. This is even more challenging when you're targeting listeners in countries where information is censored, and you don't have the opportunity to go in and do an independent survey. So, how is this done? And how important is shortwave as a broadcast platform? Andrew Janicek again.
But we rely on a contract company to and this is not just for Radio Free Asia, but for all of U.S. international broadcasting, a company that is, I think it's either contracted directly by the Broadcasting Board of Governors or the International Broadcasting Bureau. They do go out and they do surveys on site for listeners and try to get a best read as to how much they're listening to Radio Free Asia, to VOA, even probably others like BBC and Deutsche Welle too. And for example, if we use the North Korean example, again, impossible to get into North Korea. So they do travel to places like South Korea and find people that have been able to get out of country and are now living in the South and interview them about their experiences and their listening habits to shortwave radio. And there is the way we get our information about how successful or how unsuccessful we may be in our listening area.
When it comes to shortwave, up to how many frequencies would you have, let's say, on air at one time to, let's say, Vietnam or China?
I think it depends on maybe the amount of jamming we might face. For example, in Cambodia, there's no jamming known of for our shortwave frequencies. So we may live off of one shortwave frequency for them and off of an affiliate in Phnom Penh, one FM frequency. But if you use the extreme like China, where they may be jamming us in Mandarin, again, there was one time where we had 1 hour of programming broadcast on 13 frequencies. I don't know that we'll see that much anymore, only because of the fact that budgets have forced us to cut back on the number of frequencies we've been broadcasting on. We're seeing that in our Vietnamese service, where we're jammed also. The more we put on, the more frequencies we use, the more likely we're able to get around jamming. The common sense statement on it is for every frequency you put up, we have to put up one to jam you. And in some cases, they may use multiples just to make sure that the jamming is really effective. So if we are not jammed and we're heard on one frequency, great. Low cost, not a problem. But if we are jammed and we need to fight that somehow, then it takes multiple frequencies, and multiple different frequencies serve different regions in different ways, too. One frequency may serve the northern part of China quite well, but not the south, and vice versa. Another frequency is serving the south quite well, but not the north.
You are listening to Radio Free Asia.
We're not listening for FM fidelity here. I'm not listening for the latest Metallica hit to be in my headphones, but we're looking for news and information, and you as well as anybody else would know too. If there's a problem with the signal, after you've listened to it for 5-10 minutes, it's almost like the brain helps you tune that out, and you do pick up the information. Even in some of the worst signals that you can hear, even another radio station talking over the top of you, if you listen hard, again, your ear finally fine-tunes itself to hear the news and information. So I'm not there for the audio quality. I'm there for the news and information.
And I think that's very important, because in places like North Korea, Vietnam, China, it's the information, the content that is key. And if somebody really wants to know what's going on in their back door in China, the noise, they will put the noise aside.
As I mentioned during the briefing, our service director from our Mandarin service said, you know, one of the things we don't have to worry about is necessarily promoting all of our frequencies. We do that as a service, and it's on our website, and most of our frequencies are listed there. But she also said, too, says, don't worry about putting it there, because no matter where you are, Radio Free Asia, we, our listeners, we will find you. So if they're motivated, they're going to come and find you anyways, even if they can't find their frequency. And you can only imagine the informal networks that are within certain towns and cities, whereas if Keith is listening to RFA on a certain frequency, well, then he tells AJ, AJ tells John, John tells Mary, and it goes on and on from there. So that way, within a short amount of time, our little network knows exactly where to go for the news and information we want.
Jennifer Joe and the rest of the staff at RFA feel pride in the work they do because of the difference they are making in people's lives. And when they hear about personal stories, their impact means even more.
I pride myself on the fact that every day we make a difference in people's lives, because we bring them news information that they cannot get elsewhere. The impact, a lot of times, when we talk about our impact, people think we're exaggerating, but we're not. A couple of years ago, we got a letter. The host of our investigative report feature program, he got a letter from a retired cadre. He was in his 80s. He was a high-level cadre. And he said he had a heart issue, and he wanted to get treatment at the best hospital in town. But his retirement pension would only allow him to go to a certain hospital. And he said, I dedicated my entire life to this country, to the party, and this is how they're treating me. We interviewed him. We interviewed the supervisor with his former work unit. We aired the report. A week after we aired the report, his former work unit told him, okay, you can go get treatment at the hospital of your choice. But next time, just talk to us directly. Don't go to a foreign radio station. That this is the kind of impact that we are looking at. I know people will say, oh, it's anecdotal. It's just one little case. But really, there are dozens of cases like that in the 15 years we've been on the air. I know for a fact we are making a difference in people's lives.
This is PCJ Radio on 88.2 FM. This is PCJ Radio on 107.5 FM in Nairobi, Kenya. And nationwide on 5. This is PCJ Radio on KBCT in Waco, Texas. This is PCJ Radio on 99.55 kilohertz to Latin America. This is PCJ Radio on 7590 kilohertz DRM. On shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is PCJ Radio.
Last week, we played 8 interval signals from 8 international broadcasters to give 2 listeners a chance to win a notepad and pen from this year's SWL Winterfest held in Plymouth Meeting, Pennsylvania. This notepad and pen were made especially for the 25th anniversary of the fest. The contest is still on, so how do you enter? Listen to this. We're going to play it again, Sam. So, if you can name the countries and stations of the following interval signals, just email us with the answers and you'll be entered into the draw. So what were those 8 stations and countries? Send us your answers to mnp@pcjmedia.com. That email address again, mnp@pcjmedia.com. We'll announce the winners in 2 weeks' time. Now time for this week's propagation report. Here's Dan Hensley.
On April 21st, a 10.7 centimeter flux of 100. From April 22nd to April 25th, a 10.7 centimeter flux of 105. From April 26th to April 27th, a 10.7 centimeter flux of 100. The A index will be 5 on April 21st and 22nd, followed by an A index of 10 on April 23rd and 24th. From April 25th to April 27th, the A index will be 5. The KP index will be 2 on April 21st and 22nd. On April 23rd and 24th, the KP index will be 4. From April 25th to April 27th, the KP index will be 2. Sunspot group 1455 is rotating out of view this week as we see 4 new sunspot groups rotate into view. Those sunspot groups are 1459, 1460, 1461, and 1462. The Solar Dynamics Observatory says sunspot group 1460 is growing rapidly and may soon pose a threat for M-class solar flares. No coronal holes have been noticed this week. According to SpaceWeather.com, a recent volley of C-class solar flares sent waves of ionization rippling through the atmosphere high over Europe, and this event was detected by Dave Gradwell of Birr, Ireland, using VLF radio equipment. The source of the flares is a sunspot in the sun's southern hemisphere, tentatively numbered AR1463, one of several active regions popping up around the solar disk. With sunspot numbers on the rise, more flares and ion waves are likely in the days ahead. On April 16th, sunspot AR1460 did not exist. 24 hours later, it was twice as big as the planet Earth. Magnetic fields on the sun's northeastern limb erupted around 1745 UTC on April 16th, producing one of the most visually spectacular explosions in years. NASA's Solar Dynamics Observatory, SDO, recorded the blast at extreme ultraviolet wavelengths. The explosion, which registered M1.7 on the Richter scale of solar flares, was not Earth-directed, but it did hurl a CME into space. Analysts at the Goddard Space Weather Lab have analyzed the trajectory of the cloud and found that it will hit NASA's Stereo B spacecraft, the Spitzer Space Telescope, and the rover Curiosity en route to Mars. Planets Venus and Mars could also receive a glancing blow. Using data from SDO, Steele Hill of NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center assembled a must-see movie of the event. It shows the explosion unfolding at 304A, a wavelength which traces plasma with a temperature around 80,000 K. Coverage of the blast was not limited to space telescopes. Amateur astronomers saw it too. Yesterday's prominence on the sun's eastern limb was one of the largest in years. It was a wonderful sight in the eyepiece and in the camera.
Thanks, Dan. And with that, we've come to the end of our program. If you'd like to send us an email, and we hope you do, just send it to mnp@pcjmedia.com. Once again, that email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. As well, if you'd like to listen to this show or any past editions of Media Network Plus, just visit our website, www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus, all one word. So on behalf of Keith Perron and Dan Hensley, this is Paulette McQuarrie in Vancouver, Canada, saying so long and see you soon.